This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts. Neil Conan is on vacation. It's Independence Day, so forget our Puritan roots for a minute. It's time for fireworks, family, friends, and food. Succulent ribs, luscious hamburgers, sweet corn, creamy potato salad, apple pie, all celebrate independence from that pesky little Americanism, dieting. Ian Jackman has traveled the country, and not just on the 4th, to taste the breadth and width of American cuisine. He's cataloged his findings in a new book, Eat This, 1001 Things to Eat Before You Diet. Later in the hour, we'll continue traveling. We're talking about enriching vacations. Drop us email now. Let us know the most life-changing trips you've been on. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, eat this. It's Independence Day. What does freedom taste like? Whether it's glazed donuts, chicken a la king, or just pie. What's the one thing you want to eat before you go on that diet? Join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ian Jackman is the author of Eat This, 1001 Things to Eat Before You Diet, and he's in our New York bureau today. Welcome.
Thank you, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm very well. So given that it's the 4th of July, I think it would really be remiss not to start with burgers. Especially because you did so much research, really, for the good of all of us. Thank you for for doing all that research.
Oh, you're very welcome.
What's your criteria for a good burger?
I think it's obviously the quality of the meat. The meat has to have a certain looseness, a juiciness to it that's it's not dried out. When it's laid on the bun, there is a certain amount of seepage of happy juices that the bun can soak up. I personally like a cheeseburger, and I do like some vegetation with my burger. And
are you a cheddar cheese man?
Yes. Yes. And big piece of red onion always goes down well with me. I'm sorry.
Since we're talking about traditional July 4th meal, what comes next? Corn on the cob?
Sweet corn. Up here in New York State, the sweet corn comes in right around July 4th. It's fantastic in July 4th, and then it remains fantastic, and then it just disappears. So you can really tell the season by the quality of the sweet corn. And the fresher, the better, obviously.
Do you have a hint for choosing the best, since it's there in the husk when you're trying to buy it?
I think if the farm, go to a farm stand, and if the farm stand allows you to peel back the greenery a little bit and just make sure it hasn't been nibbled by any little insects, and if it squeaks, then it's good. But if at a farm stand, you're pretty much certain that it's been in the field, maybe even that day, and it's fresh. It's the freshness, because the sugar starts to break down after the sweet corn has been out of the ground. So the fresher, the better.
And do you grill your corn?
I often parboil it and then stick it on the grill for a couple of minutes just to char the outside. But you can boil it and then chop it off with a knife and eat it with a fork, or just go at it with your bare hands, which is always the best. Rolled in butter, too.
Oh, yes, course. Certainly.
Yes, yes.
And what about for dessert?
Well, again, for this time of year, blueberries up in this part of the country, blueberries are fantastic. If you can find a blueberry pie, my family and I had a blueberry pie a couple of weeks ago, which was just extraordinary out in New Jersey. Raspberry pie I'm very fond of. Anything with rhubarb in it, anything with strawberries in it.
I've always felt that rhubarb really needs something else with it. Rhubarb alone does not stand.
I used to eat, I'm not from this country. You have to get a Brit to come and talk on July 4th about American food. But I feel it's some penance for some royalist ancestor I didn't
Right,
really
we appreciate you taking it for us.
Rhubarb used to grow in the garden where I lived, and we used to just cook it up with a little bit of water and brown sugar, and it's good. You might want to put some Greek yogurt on it or custard, as we would call it in England. But I like plain rhubarb, I have to say.
We're talking about foods you should eat before you diet. Our number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. Ian Jackman, as you were putting together this book, were there surprises in terms of places you expected not to have very good food, or the reverse as you traveled the country?
I was constantly surprised. There were so many things that I just had never heard of think that I didn't know existed. And I contacted people around the country and asked them what was good to eat where they lived, and I was constantly surprised by what they told me. For example, in Michigan, there's another English dish, the Cornish pasty, is thriving up there in Michigan, just as much as it, you know, came across from England pretty much unchanged, and that was a surprise to me.
That's a little stuffed dough.
Yes, it's a triangular shaped dough filled with cubed potatoes and swede and meat, which was traditionally eaten in Cornwall in the southern part of England, and has made it up to Michigan mysteriously. Well, not mysteriously. It came with the tin miners, but it's mysterious that it existed to me.
Let's hear from Howard in Phoenix. Howard, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi, how are you?
What are you eating?
What I would like to eat is a pastrami on rye, preferably one about 8 inches tall, lathered with deli mustard and maybe a big fat knish alongside.
Oh, yes.
Can you get a good pastrami in Phoenix, Howard?
Absolutely not. It's horrible. I'm actually the restaurant critic at the newspaper here, and when I'm not eating out, I never get a chance to eat all the things that I crave. I'm sitting here now over a pile of lettuce. So just hearing your show is making me weak in the knees.
You sound like maybe you're not a Phoenix native.
Well, I grew up in New York, and as the French say, you know, you always go back to your first loves, and even though I've eaten all over the world, and I'm a restaurant critic here, there's still the 13-year-old in me who wants a pastrami sandwich.
And have you mastered that art of sort of unhinging your jaw to take a bite of the giant sandwich?
Absolutely. That's one of the first things you learn in Brooklyn, New York.
I'm always curious about restaurant critics. Do you disguise yourself when you go to restaurants?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yes. I take great pains to maintain my anonymity.
So I'm assuming Howard is a pseudonym.
I'm sorry?
Is Howard a pseudonym?
No, it's my name, but I am unlisted. I have credit cards and phony names. Even my wife doesn't know who I am.
Well, your secret's safe with us. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Pastrami on rye. I know I'm going to get hungry by a few more calls.
I am already salivating.
Let's hear from Mike in La Grande, Oregon. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Talk the Nation. Oh, we've lost Mike. How about Paul in San Francisco?
Hi there.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
One of the most wonderful and sublimely magical eating experiences is fresh baked bread with fresh honey and fresh butter from a local dairy. And I've had this experience a few times in my life, but nothing really compares with these very essential original food items.
And
if you ever have the chance to taste fresh honey straight from the hive, it is a spectacular thing.
Do you have a preference for what flowers the bees have been pollinating for their honey?
Well, it's very difficult to really say what the bees have been collecting because they travel a great distance. So you really have to have a 4-mile radius of a certain crop to be able to definitively say what honeys have been eating. But you can see the nectar in the hive that often shows up in different colors.
And, Paul, I have to ask, just because you've offered such an incredibly healthy snack here on our show, is there something, you know, deep-fried that you also crave?
Deep okra is very lovely. You can get fresh okra and with a light breading, and you can deep-fry that, and it has just a wonderful, funny texture. Okra is both slimy and furry at the same time, which is not usually a great combination of culinary delights, but okra's great deep-fried.
Paul, thanks for your call.
I think Paul makes a terrific point. The simplicity of something can be just the simpler the better. If you take a fresh tomato and slice that up and put fleur de sel on it and eat that with the bread too, there can be very few things better than that, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're almost there on the tomatoes. They're not quite ready.
A couple of weeks, maybe.
I feel that if you complain about tomatoes the rest of the year, you need to consume vast quantities of them for the 3 or 4 weeks that they're perfect.
And cherries and peaches and everything that goes for. Absolutely, I agree.
Let's hear from Ben in Rockville, Illinois.
Hi, how you doing? Happy 4th of July.
You too.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, how you doing? I have to tell you that I'm right now salivating at the mouth just listening. especially when rhubarb and custard. I mean, but I grew up in England, so that was a huge thing we ate as a child. But
absolutely.
Speaking of just depraved food, it would have to be before a diet, a dessert. Cake, Alamo cheesecake, mint chocolate chip ice cream, the things that you're truly going to miss before you start your diet. And it always seems to be the first thing to go is kick away the desserts.
So you're a cheesecake fan, Ben?
Cheesecake Factory, honestly, when I'm in and out of Chicago, is probably my second home because it's just, the food is just so good. And desserts, there's just something decadent about having them, the way they melt in your mouth and just the true chewing and just enjoying all the flavors that are bursting forth.
It is.
Pies, exactly.
It's the unnecessariness of dessert that makes it so good. You don't have to have it by any means, but if you do, and if you can, you should.
Do you have a favorite?
In my book, I finish up the book pretty much with a place in Los Angeles called the Apple Pan, which is really a hamburger restaurant. And somebody recommended to me that I try the banana cream pie at the Apple Pan restaurant. And I'm not necessarily an enormous consumer of bananas, but this particular dessert was so fresh. So I was just excited eating it. My mouth was such a great mouthfeel, thick layer of cream on top. Just a perfect dessert, and that was my favorite.
We are talking about America's most delicious delights, whether they're on your diet or not. Give us a call from around the country. Let's hear about the regional food that you're eating this time of year. What are your favorite indulgences? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. My guest is Ian Jackman, author of Eat This, 1001 Things to Eat Before You Diet. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. We are talking food this hour, from fresh honey in San Francisco to pastrami on rye in Brooklyn. What's the thing you'd eat the day before you went on a diet? My guest is Ian Jackman. He's the author of Eat This, 1001 Things to Eat Before You Diet. And of course, we want to hear from you. Share your best indulgence with us. The number 800-989-TALK or email talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Ian Jackman, were there things that you, as you were tasting, actually didn't like but felt that you should include in the book because others might?
I didn't really put anything in that I didn't like myself, no. I pretty much can honestly say there's not much I don't like at all. Sea cucumber I did put in the book because it was so interesting and unusual, and I couldn't really say I liked it, but it was certainly an experience eating it.
That sounds like a euphemism to me.
What
was it like?
It was very, very challenging texture. I think the taste, you have to say, the taste was really added to it by the rest of the meal, by the rest of the dish, rather. But the texture was very soft and messy.
Where did you have it?
I had it at the wedding of a friend of mine in a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco. It was a big Chinese wedding banquet.
Let's hear from Linnell in Marstown, New Jersey. Linnell, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello, thank you very much. I've been really enjoying the show. My selection is something that's wrong on many levels, financially, politically, and healthy. Foie gras.
And does its triple wrongness make it even more delicious?
I'm not sure. It's just a sublime thing that I've had like once in my life, and I would love to have it one more time. But again, financially, it's pretty prohibitive. But that would be my selection.
Thanks, Linnell. Let's hear from Deborah in Milwaukee. Deborah, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
I once read this: pleasure is not a frivolous process. It is necessary for the survival of the species. And after
hear, hear.
Pardon?
Sounds good to me.
I know. It's like put food in a whole new perspective. But I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where pasties are a mainstay.
Yes, absolutely.
And they are wonderful. And I grew up watching my dad fly fish, and I ate a lot of wonderful, fresh, clean, good fish, which set a high standard for me. If I could eat anything right now, it would be something that I had in Maine. When I lived in Maine in a little renovated boathouse, it was a scallop stew. And it was a little, just a little, really old small shack, and they served this wonderful, just real basic scallop stew with half and half scallops, sherry, garlic, and butter.
Yum. Thanks, Doctor.
Good.
It sure
does.
That
does sound good. I ate some scallops last week in San Diego. Just fantastic. Wrapped in bacon.
So did you ever decide, as you debated somewhat in your book, when a soup becomes a stew?
I think when it reaches a consistency where you tip up the plate and it doesn't really move, I think that's a stew rather than a soup. Or you eat it with your two minds whether to eat it with a fork. I think that's a stew.
Well, which also makes me ask, you had, going into this, somewhat strong opinions about whether or not carrots belong in Irish stew because
Absolutely.
Of your Irish mother's
yes,
influence.
Yes.
How much of people's favorites and connection to food has to do with the circumstances under which you ate them?
I think everything. I think context is pretty much everything in food. I mean, I really think it is true to say we are what we eat. And you can find out so much about a place from the food you find there. Looking at food is a bit like geology. You know, you strip back the layers and look into the place to find out what it is. And that's all about place and context and all the people who've passed through a place. It's all part of the context.
We have email from Ron who says, while it has been over a decade since I've eaten any kind of red meat or pork products, if my mom were still alive, I would so sink my teeth into her steak or pork chops along with her first-class mashed potatoes. She made them like no one else, even when we went out to eat with the family. As the saying goes, often imitated, never duplicated. Apparently, mom's meat was enough to turn him from being a vegetarian. We also heard from Cindy, whose vote is Wisconsin squeaky cheese curds.
Aha.
I need an explanation on that. Do you know what squeaky cheese curds are, Ian?
I know they are something that is pretty much unique to that part of the country, and I didn't eat them myself. State fair cheese curds. I imagine it's some byproduct of the cheese-making process, and the squeakiness would imply the leavings in the bottom of a pail after you make the cheese.
Rosemary in Sterling, Alaska says, I would love to pig out on any part of the pig, from pickled pig's feet to ham to sausage to head cheese. This is a trend that I've been noticing lately. Are Americans getting more onto unusual cuts of meat?
That could well be true. That could well be true. I mean, people are looking at snake in a different way than they did before. People are looking at buffalo maybe in a different way than they did before. And they're knowing that different kinds of meat could be very good for you. Ostrich, for example, tremendously low in fat, tastes very good. So why not use it?
We have an email from Michelle in San Francisco, who I'm happy to say is bucking the stereotype that people in San Francisco are terribly healthy, like the honey fan we heard from earlier. She says, the taste of a cold beer on a hot summer day after a bike ride or hike in the mountains. Okay, she's a little healthy. Hike in the mountains is unparalleled. Food, or rather drink, as full sensory experience. And a slice of sausage pizza and my life is complete. Go,
yes.
Michelle.
Well, beer is actually pretty good for rehydrating yourself after exercise. So, and don't forget the gentleman who talked about honey on his bread also had fresh butter too, so he had butter on his bread.
That's true. Pizza is one of those foods that people around the country feel very strongly about regional differences.
Yes. Well, here in New York, thin crust coal oven fired pizza is a sort of local treasure, especially in Brooklyn, and I agree, it is fantastic, but I would not want to argue about the merits of pizza with somebody from Chicago or anybody from anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, barbecue is another one of those.
Barbecue is very dangerous. It's
get someone from Kansas City and someone from North Carolina and someone from Memphis in a room together. Do not mention barbecue.
Religion, politics, and barbecue. You can't argue about them.
Let's hear from Anne in Portland, Oregon. Anne, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi. Back in the 70s, I lived in Buffalo, New York, and just down the road from where I worked was a little mom-and-pop restaurant that was very reminiscent of some places like in Paris, very small tables, very few people, and on Friday they served beef on wick. The beef was a standing rib roast, sliced very thin but very high, and the weck is kind of an got the name from the German wecken. It was a hard roll, and it was the most delicious thing I have ever eaten, and I have never found it again. And if I were in my 40s, I would start one here in Portland, Oregon.
Now that sandwich is very particular to that part of the world. Sandwiches are very indicative of place often, and that the beef on weck is very much Buffalo, New York.
It was just fantastic.
Thank you, Anne. It's interesting how many of these influences, you know, are regional, are also, of course, ethnic. You know, not surprising that you get a German influence in one part of the country and a Mexican influence in another part of the country, I suppose.
Absolutely. No, that's all part of the geology I was talking about before. It's where people have come from, and what they've found where they've reached in this part of the, you know, whatever part of the country they end up, the influences all converge and come together to form the regional cuisine.
I once asked someone why we didn't have better pizza here in Washington, and it was their theory that because we do not have a dominant ethnic group, because it's such a polyglot here that there was not one dominant style of Washington pizza and everyone was making their own, and that you needed more of a plurality of influence to get
good
pizza.
That could be true.
Let's hear from Charles in Rehoboth Beach. Charles, you must be on vacation.
Actually, no. I'm an executive chef, and I own a restaurant here. In fact, we're just getting ready to open for our 4th of July celebration. But I wanted to throw my two cents in. My favorite is actually a meal, and it would be what we had in my childhood every 4th of July, which was a pork barbecue that was an amalgam of the traditional North Carolina and a Western style. My grandfather was from Arizona originally. We would have steamed Maryland crabs, followed up with apple pie made with a traditional crust with lard and homemade vanilla ice cream with fresh strawberries mixed into the batch.
Wow.
Well, can I ask Charles a question?
Yes, please.
Certainly.
Charles, what are you serving today for the 4th? What says the 4th at your restaurant?
Well, actually, I'm doing a rack of lamb and our own unique crab cakes, which are seasoned with paprika and cumin, very different from the traditional ones of my childhood. And we've got some wonderful fresh squash that I just bought at a farm stand that I'm going to be sautéing with onions and a little bit of turmeric.
Charles, that sounds fantastic.
What's for dessert, Charles?
I'm sorry?
What's for dessert at the restaurant?
Oh, well, we have a cappuccino mocha cheesecake that we actually won several awards for, as well as beautiful homemade sorbets with blueberries and fresh strawberries.
Thank you, Charles.
Should we be thanking Charles?
I should have eaten before this show. It's really
too
painful. We have email from Jan who says, I am now sitting down to eat a BLT sandwich with my first tomato from the Garden of the Year. Ironically, the name of this tomato, which I picked this morning, is 4th of July tomato. Tomorrow, I diet.
Well, a BLT is not so bad.
Well, the B part of the B,
I suppose.
We also heard from Susan, who says deep-fried dill pickles. Have you ever heard of deep-fried dill pickles?
Yeah, I think that's something in something southern.
She says Cedar Falls, Iowa is her spot for them.
Okay.
Z's 7 C's. If they exist other places, I haven't found them, and attempts to recreate the delicacy at home are unsuccessful. Yeah,
I don't know whether you'd want to try that at home.
I know. I think that's something a trained professional needs to tackle.
A dill pickle is perfectly fine by itself, in my opinion. But.
This is Peter who says, In-N-Out Burger, double-double, animal style. Since I left California, I can't get them anymore. Best burger on the planet. For those of us on the East Coast, you should probably describe what a double-double is.
Well, a double-double is two patties and cheese, and it's handmade. And I know I live 2,400 miles from the nearest In-N-Out Burger, and it's a source of constant upset to me.
And what does animal style mean?
You know what? I can't remember.
I think there it's are lots of with everything with onions, and I'm sure someone will call in and tell us.
I'm sure. That's what I don't know. If I lived right next to one, I would know immediately.
Well, you have to master the lingo on a lot of this. I remember in Philadelphia about ordering your cheese with, and apparently in Cincinnati, your chili comes five ways. And did you have to master all this language on top of the food?
I try and keep prodigious notes on everything because I don't have the best memory. But chili 1, 2, 3, 4 ways, and I did try and figure out how to order a cheesesteak with onions and provolone, which is how I wanted it.
As opposed to with cheese whiz.
As opposed to with cheese whiz and without onions.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's hear from Dale in Alaska. Where are you in Alaska, Dale?
I'm in Nanilchik.
Of course you are. What are you eating?
Smoked salmon.
Mm. Of course.
Went down to the beach last night, got the fish from a set net site, took it home, cleaned it, brined it, smoked it, and had it for breakfast this morning.
Wow. So even though it was that fresh, you decided to smoke it, huh?
Oh, absolutely. The fresher, the best the smoked is. It's just absolutely wonderful that way.
Mm. What do you eat with that? You just eat it by itself?
Almost all the time just by itself. That, a cold home-brewed beer.
Homebrew beer, oh my goodness.
Did you have the homebrew beer for breakfast too?
No, I didn't. I'm not that far along yet.
Thank you, Dale. Let's hear from Christina in Georgia. Christina, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Christina.
You're on the air, Christina.
Oh, okay, here we go. If I had it, didn't have to feel guilty for it, it would be chicken and dumplings, which I only eat once a year on Thanksgiving.
And who makes them?
My Aunt Ernestine, and I'm not kidding you. My grandmother's name is Darlene. It's Darlene, Ernestine, and Myrtle.
But you got away with Christina, huh?
Yeah, I got away with Christina. Luckily, my dad, he grew up in Atlanta, so yeah, I got lucky.
Have you learned how to make chicken and dumplings, or do you count on Aunt Ernestine?
No, I really, honestly, like, I cook really healthy, and I really like eating healthy. I would never even think of chicken dumplings except for that. Actually, when I was little, I never knew that there was a G on the end. It was dumplings. I didn't realize until I was a little older that there was a G there.
Is the recipe even written down?
No, I don't. I'm not even sure. It's like her signature thing. Like every time, you know, you go over to Ernestine, it's just chicken and dumplings. I gotta ask her. Actually, my Aunt Jane taught me how to make biscuits from scratch, so I can do that, like buttermilk biscuits. But that's not that big of a deal.
Thanks, Christina. I think we have time for one more call. This is Dan in Charlotte. Dan, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you so much. Happy 4th.
You too.
Well, if everybody's got their barbecues out, well, one of the things is a dessert for a topper on top of everything. Get your cast iron griddle out. And what you're going to do is you're going to make a bananas foster. And the smokiness from the grill and the light rum and the light brown sugar are going to be melted down very well with all the extra butter that's included in it. But you're going to use about a 2-inch piece of pound cake, and on top of that, your favorite vanilla ice cream, and then scoop everything else on top of it.
Are you one of those people who inherited a cast iron griddle?
Oh, yes. I have it, and it comes out on special occasions. Other than that, I'm using stainless steel, but cast iron works out great on the grill.
Thanks, Dan. I've never heard of grilling bananas foster. It's an interesting idea.
It sounds great, though, doesn't it?
We, by the way, got an answer on the squeaky Wisconsin cheese curds. This is from Greg, who grew up in Wisconsin, lives in California, says, squeaky cheese curds are a mystery to most non-Wisconsin natives. When cheese curds are fresh, meaning just made, they've been kept at room temperature and haven't been refrigerated much yet. This is usually the conditions if you buy fresh cheese curds from a cheese factory. During this special time, when you eat the cheese curd, it squeaks when you chew it. As to why it happens, I'm not sure, but it generally indicated that you had fresh cheese curds and usually requires buying the cheese curds at the cheese factory. The squeak goes away after about 3 to 4 days.
Hmm.
Learned something new.
Good to know, absolutely.
So I'm going to let you go because we have to take a quick break. But what are you having for dinner tonight?
You know what? I don't know. I think we're going out for dinner. It's the 4th. We're not grilling. It's Wednesday, so we couldn't get anywhere to grill. So we're going out for dinner.
Do you ever diet?
I do. I take things in moderation. If I said to myself I could never eat another donut or something, a preclusive diet just wouldn't work for me. I don't have that good self-control, so I try and moderate.
Ian Jackman is the author of Eat This, 1001 Things to Eat Before You Diet. He joined us from our New York bureau. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me.